CliffCentral.com.
All right, all right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody.
Top of the morning, top of the morning.
What's happening, man?
I'm good, big guy. How are you?
Yeah, I can't complain. I listen, feeling good. I was a little bit tired yesterday because I had a pretty hectic weekend, but I believe you didn't sleep so well. So you're the one.
Oh my goodness. Yeah,
you had
it was
the
horrible.
Insomnia.
Yeah, yeah. And I've got no idea why. Like, there wasn't anything of particular importance that was on my mind. I just couldn't fall asleep for whatever reason. And the later it got, the more frustrated I got, which made me stay up even later. It was just, it was horrible.
Oh, no.
But I'm alive. Listen to this. I'm alive.
Leanne says she is, this is Leanne Winnin. She says she's so chuffed to be catching the show live today while you're painting a vase. Very good.
Wow.
Bit of creativity first thing in the morning. Yeah, I like this.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Right? Oh, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, what can we start with this morning? There's so much on the menu. We've got, of course, Democracy 101 a little bit later on. So get your questions ready, and I mean this because so many people are they're still not sure about the elections, what's happening now that registrations are done, how does it all work, where do you vote, where do you not vote, what are you allowed to do, what are you not allowed to do, what if you're overseas, anything like that that you need to know. So today is like it's almost like a public service call to action for anybody who is still sitting around waiting to figure out what they're going to do, whether you're going to go and vote here or there or anywhere else on election day. This is your chance to find out all the information that you need to know. And you can do that because after 7 o'clock, we will be joined by the general manager for electoral operations. So this is the guy who he manages the whole thing across the whole country. He's a really important dude. And I think it'll be useful for you to talk to him.
I think so too.
Come on. Come on down. Join us. We're keen to hear from you. Okay, so a couple of things. First up, James, producer James, who's even got a spanner in his bio there, says, we made it live and on time with working audio. It's already a good day. Yes, it is, James. Yes, it is.
Yes, sir. And yes, sir.
Ex-producer Ryan, who's about to leave for Ireland, says, morning all. So I see lots and lots of people busy here. Even Angelo Agrizi is joining us this morning. That's always good to know. You know, we've got some whistleblowers, guys who used to be involved in corruption.
Yeah, once upon a time.
You
know, his time on the stand at the commission was one of them. It was hilariously tragic, if I can put it that way.
Why? Like, because you suddenly found out how screwed the whole system is, how rotten everything is.
Just how cheap some people are. Like, he pointed out that he sent groceries to someone's house. Mm-hmm. Like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
In fact, I interviewed Angelo shortly after, so I'm glad he's still listening to us. You see, once you get the bug for this show, you can't really leave. I interviewed him a while ago, and he was fascinating because I remember the person in question that you're talking about, I think, is Nomvula Mokonyane. She was prepared to, like, change tenders and award things for a box of meat, I think it was.
Like, my God.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? So you never know who's going to be listening when you join us in the morning. Busiso says, good morning, all. And Slippery Pickle says, I'll be at the polls at the table. It says, if voting changed governments, they wouldn't let you do it in the first place. Change my mind. It's very Stephen Crowder of you, Slippery Pickle, but I like it.
Yep.
Angelo says, should I have kept quiet? No si vive. Well, Nosy Viwe is in the news because she apparently took a little bribe.
Yep.
But you know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah. I tweeted about it yesterday. She's going to prolong the legal process. Ultimately, what's going to happen is that she's just going to get a slap on the wrist and life continues as usual.
Correct. And I think you're exactly right. Sadly, that's precisely what's going to happen.
Yep.
All right, well, I don't want to start the day talking about politicians, even though we already have. I think we must start with something to make you laugh. So I follow so many stupid channels. If you saw some of the stupid things that I follow that I'm really into on social media. This one channel is like they take this red hot iron ball, like a marble, but a big one. They heat it up until it's red hot.
Yep.
And they drop it in things. Mm. Like they'll drop it in, you know, they'll drop it in on a coconut, or they'll put it in a barrel of Vaseline or whatever. So look at this.
The video I saw of them doing that, I think it was a barrel just filled with ice, and they let that ball sink in there, and they made ramen noodles on top of it or something like that. Yeah, it's madness.
So, I mean, it's such a stupid thing to say. They really aren't doing anything revolutionary or clever here. They're just the same thing every time. They just find something new, and they try to melt or boil or burn through whatever they can put it on. But I mean, it's really, I find this kind of thing fascinating. I'd rather watch that than politics some days, you know? So the thing that got my attention yesterday is, this is pretty gross. So they put it in aloe vera gel, you know, stuff that people will use on their skin or whatever. But listen to the sound. Just listen to the sound it makes when you drop this thing into aloe vera gel. Are you ready?
Yeah, I was ready. It's all like, right, it's got gears.
So, I mean, if you just listen to the sound, if you're not watching this, and you don't need to be watching it because it just looks like someone dropping a red hot ball of iron into a beaker filled with Vaseline or whatever. But it sounds so goddamn funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
It's a new like, kind of fart machine.
Seriously, if you were walking past and you heard that, you'd swear someone in some way needs help. Like, that person needs help immediately. That person's in distress. Oh my word, that was hilarious.
No. So I sent it to Leanne Moll, who was on the show with us yesterday, and she replied immediately and said she was once at a Chinese restaurant and she heard in the next stall in the bathroom someone made exactly that sound, and she was tapping her feet, both her feet, on the floor at the same time. That's all she could see, obviously, but this was the sound coming from the cubicle next. So I thought that was pretty hilarious. Oh, you know, man. I can't be serious all the time. I'm sorry. And other people who come here for that. But
seriously, it just makes you dull, honestly. Oh, you need to have a chuckle every now and again. And I was pointing this out to, I forgot who I was talking about. But anyway, they were asking me, like, why do you keep the friends that you do? I'm like, they're genuinely the few people that I can have a belly laugh with. You know, when you end up having to crawl into the fetal position because you just can't stand it? That's one of the main reasons my friends are my friends. Exactly. Like, 100% you have to let it out.
So, this is funny too. I found this. There's this channel that all they do is they find like people who speak bizarre and different and weird languages. That some of these languages are very, very threatened. They might not last another generation. For example, this tribe, I found out from somebody I know who's actually an expert in these things. He's going around and he's helping the Nama and the Khoi and the San and all the various sub-tribes to look after their languages and to document the languages, because otherwise they'll go out of circulation and people will forget how to speak them. So there are a couple of old people in like remote villages who still speak some of these languages. And these are people from Tanzania, he tells me, who are called the Hadzabe tribe. And they are remnants of the San people in Tanzania. So what happened is these guys either were there, you know, like more than 900 or 1,000 years ago, but it's even more likely that they were pushed out all the way south, all the way north, and then fled east again. So, I mean, I find this fascinating, but listen to this. I mean, I know you You know, a lot of South Africans pride themselves on being able to get the clicks right. But listen to these ones. This is quite.
What's funny. Your name? What's your own name?
Shakuku.
What?
Shakuku.
What's your name?
Ndonya.
What's your name?
Oma Aide Ela.
Eh?
Oma Aide Ela.
Hmm. All I can say is that woman is like, she could see she's in charge of the whole fucking tribe. She's keeping them all in mind.
She's like, Donya. What?
Donya. No, she's like, I don't take any shit.
She looked like she was about to start a rap verse. It was serious.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, she's made of something tough. Uh-huh, so, all right. Uh-huh. You want to talk about something that is quite serious this morning. Oh, by the way, coming up tomorrow, I've got to throw forward to this. So I spoke to a guy because, you know, there's this it's just a never ending dialogue around what's happening in Gaza and what's happening in Israel. And a lot of people in South Africa are very interested in this. I've got to say, not just Jewish people and pro-Palestinian people. A lot of South Africans are very interested because they see, and I think you can't be stupid and ignore the fact that this has an international relations element, which is about the globe. It's about a conflict that will ultimately go further than those countries. And that's why we have to pay attention to it. But I met with, it's about a week now since I met him, but Daniel Taub, who is an expert in international law. He specializes in counterterrorism and the laws of war. He was an Israeli diplomat. He actually did the negotiations in the 90s between Arafat and the Israelis, which is really interesting. So I think you might find that conversation fairly fascinating. I certainly loved it. Hugely intelligent man. Very, very smart and perceptive takes on what's going on there. And it may be worth a look. But you wanted to talk about how political correctness is actually shaping language.
Yeah, and we were having a chat about it during when we were doing Ryan's farewell, when we were sitting around at the table. And I was pointing out the fact that it's amazing how nowadays, like, you can't just make a statement for something. You have to first point out that you're not speaking about the entirety of whatever that subject may be. Like, for argument's sake, if you were to point out bad behavior on the part of men, you'd have to first off say, like, add the caveat of saying, mind you, I'm not saying that all men are this, but there are men who do 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, to intelligent people, I would assume pointing out a fact does not make, you know, is not a holistic thing. Like,
in other words,
we can easily point to one thing and come to an understanding about it without having to shame the rest of the things that go along with it.
Yeah, I mentioned this yesterday on the show. I heard someone explaining how John Stewart used to say that when you asked Hillary Clinton a question, she would start buffering. You could see her already lining up the most politically correct answer she could come up with to offend the least number of people. But I saw another clip yesterday of Dr. Phil on Bill Maher's show. And he was talking about how political correctness and wokeism has really shaped language. And he said, I'm not just talking about pronouns. You know, because there's some words that you're not allowed to use and there's some words that you are forced to use.
Right.
But what he was saying is that the Department of Justice in the US has come up with some kind of euphemism for a felon. So instead of calling someone a felon, you know, a prisoner, a lawbreaker, a criminal, in America, there's this whole movement now by people who want to have these people called justice interacting persons.
What the persons hell who are, does that even mean?
Yeah. People who are interacting with justice. I mean, can you imagine a more ridiculous euphemism for someone who's stealing cars or raping women or, you know? Well, I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. And
what's
this comes
wrong with
from
the word criminal?
Well, you see, these people, their weapon is language. And this is what the rest of us have to realize. It's taken me a long time to get this into my head. The people who do this with language, they do it maliciously. They are not trying to use language to communicate. They are trying to use language to manipulate. So they will use a term like justice compromised people or justice interacting people or whatever, because they want the rest of us to be brainwashed into thinking that these people are socially acceptable. They want us to use the language they choose for us to use and get us so busy thinking, like you said, every time you have a conversation now, you have to consider all the exceptions. You have to be like a lawyer. Before you make a statement about anything, you first have to look at the exclusions to that statement. You have to say, well, as a straight white man, and which is a stupid thing to say, because who came for that? No one, right? So you first have to say these things, and then you have to make sure that everyone around the table isn't going to get upset. So you then have to say, you know, no offense to anybody here at this table, or I'm going to say this, but I want to be clear that I don't necessarily support this in that, and all this kind of crap, instead of just saying it.
And it's going to kill our day-to-day interactions. Because if I'm too busy tiptoeing around your feelings instead of just speaking the truth, we're both going to get into this tangle that just doesn't end. It'll be excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, because we'll both be too terrified to say anything because we're too terrified to offend one another. And on top of that, who said people's feelings were a premium all of a sudden? Like, why are those being treated as the paramount thing that we should all care about? Like, genuinely, now I have to care about how you feel about something? When did the world ever care how we feel?
Like, I know, but this is, of course, again, you can say that, Jack, but you are going to run up against people who think that the only thing that matters is how they feel on a day-to-day basis. And they are genuinely preoccupied with that to a degree that would frighten you. Like, that's all they've got. That's their whole thing, right? So let's just take, for example, let's take a comedian. Like, I watched Jimmy Carr over the weekend, and he made a couple of jokes about, he went in all the directions. He made rape jokes, child abuse jokes. I mean, he just didn't hold back on anything. But you know, when you go to a show, this is kind of what you're going to, this is what you're buying in for. And I mentioned to Leanne yesterday, there were a couple of moments in the show, especially when it came to like religion, that a bunch of people, I mean, this is in Pretoria. So you would think that if you bought a ticket to see Jimmy Carr instead of going to Loftus, you would expect him to make some jokes that won't resonate with you 100% of the time. Right, there were a couple of jokes that I thought, whoo, he's going to get into trouble for this, but not for a minute did I go, I'm offended. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what happens is that, again, these guys on the other side, it's not because they actually genuinely are hurt by something. The guys who make these rules up, the people who want you to be PC all the time, they're not actually that interested in even their own feelings. That's a ruse. What they're trying to do is manipulate you with language. They want you to be so busy thinking about how you've got to follow all these different rules and jump through these different hoops that you don't make a point that will fight their point. That's what it is. It's clever. I mean, it's really so Machiavellian. It's so like, it's so just unbelievably sly and cunning. This is what they do.
It's pretty cool.
They live for this stuff. That's all they do. And you could see it. It happens in universities, in the humanities departments. It happens with, there's some people who've made a life of this. There's a woman in America, her name is Robin DiAngelo. She's a white woman who's written all these books about like white fragility and how, you know, white people are just the most evil thing ever. And she makes a ton of money off of stupid white people who want to be made to feel bad because they need a purpose. They need to feel something. They're just so numb. And the only way they can feel better about themselves is if they somehow, like those people in the Middle Ages that used to whip themselves at the cat of nine tails to feel the pain of Jesus on the cross. That was the whole idea. These guys are like, they're addicted to feeling guilty about themselves and feeling guilty about being white.
Why would anyone want to live that way? It boggles the mind because ultimately you're fighting against your own self-interest at the end of the day because you won't be able to express yourself. It's madness.
This woman sells, I kid you not, thousands of books. I wouldn't say millions, but thousands of books every week. She lectures around the world. She's been in South Africa, dude. She's been invited by universities and high schools in South Africa to lecture these self-absorbed white people about how evil they are. And they sit there and take it like it's like masochism. It's the weirdest thing.
And it's the highest form of masochism.
I just don't understand it, but people are into it. This is what they do.
Ultimately, though, there's a video I want you to check out. Like, what's going to end up happening is we're not going to be able to interact with one another in a normal way. Because if you were to come across a group of five people, all of them are going to have different opinions about things. And there's a high chance that one of them might be offended by one of the things that you say. And it's a dead end. I don't see where they could possibly... What the good could be for these people that are trying to control our language. It's madness. But James got me the video. Could you please play it?
Sure. Let me put it on for you.
Check this out. It's madness.
All right.
Guy, this excuse is how me. We're gonna live. Would you mind taking a photo of us?
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody say cheese.
Oh, actually, I'm a vegan. Could you please have us say something else?
Okay, everybody say tofu.
Tofu is actually not as good for you as vegans think. Any CrossFitter will tell you that. It's bad for your testosterone levels.
Okay, I'm sorry. How about we all just smile?
Oh, if one more asshole asks me to smile.
Not really an asshole. Taking a photo for you, so.
What's it a smile about anyway?
Okay, would you like me to just count backwards from three?
Oh, would you like dyslexic people to just not exist?
My cousin has dyslexia, so offended.
Adopted. Don't even know who my cousins are, so. More offended.
How about this? We all put a word we're comfortable with in our heads and I'll get the shot.
No, it doesn't sound very inclusive though, does it? I suppose you'd like us all to stand a few meters apart, would you, Stalin?
Jesus Christ.
Oh, I don't see what religion has to do with this.
Well, I'm an atheist, so majorly triggered.
Is that a comment on the gun debate? Still trying to control people.
But it's not just the people. Has anyone thought about the animals?
Look, this is what we're going to do. Everybody throw up a peace sign and I'll take a photo.
Wow. Cultural appropriation is alive and well. Why don't you just ask us to say kung fu?
Guess what? New plan. Group selfie. Ready, set, go. Boom. And looks awesome. You're going to love it.
Wait.
Nice to meet you. Oh.
You took it with the front camera, you stupid cyclist.
That's the world we are ultimately going to live in. You're not going to be able to speak your mind on anything.
That is pretty funny because... Of course, it's impossible. I mean, those people, first of all, wouldn't all be friends with each other. So it's...
Yep.
It's so... someone said to me, oh my God, this is so clever. Martin Amis, who's a brilliant English author, he died just a few years ago. Martin Amis always said, the problem with people who don't have a sense of humor, and most of these people don't. I mean, we know it's a made up thing, but
most of the people
who patrol our language, which is your whole subject here, those people don't have a sense of humor, right?
Not at all.
Martin Amis said, problem with people who don't have a sense of humor is that they also don't know when they're being serious, which is really scary because they'll tell you they're deadly serious about something and you'll be like, that's not serious. That's ridiculous.
You can't be serious about that.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Well, but the PC police, I just hope that you realize there's one more warrior against you guys. Because listen, I'm not going to stand for this shit personally. At no point am I going to be policed as far as what I am going to say or what I'm not allowed to say and all of that stuff. As long as what I'm saying is not hate speech, which I never engage in, so right. I'll be fine. In fact, the reason I started following the works of Dr. Jordan Peterson was how he stood up against the Canadian government and all of the nonsense that they were trying to impose on him. So as a result, I am now, I'm completely compassionless. That's why I don't like feelings, Gareth, because most people, most rational people, realize that feelings are fleeting, right? You're going to feel whatever it is you feel right now. And then in a couple of minutes, something else will happen to, or you'll come across a different stimuli that will make you feel something else. You can't live your life based on some feeling. And if the pursuit of your life is some feeling, you know, good luck to you, because it's such a shallow pursuit. You're not going to be happy. I can guarantee that much.
Louis says in the comments, the whole movement will create more introverts. People will avoid interacting with each other out of fear of what might happen if they attempt to have a simple conversation, which is crazy. Well, yeah, but I don't think all of us will fall for this crap, because, I mean, you've just said you're one more warrior against them. And I think every day there are, especially you see Gen Z, a lot of these people are just coming out of the womb anti this stuff, right? Because they're so saturated in it when they're young that they just want to break free. So there's this rebellious streak that you trigger in some people, and I'm afraid for the language police, you guys are in big trouble. It's not going to work in the long run. People will always find a way to. The whole point of communication, the whole point of language, is so we can understand each other. And when you make bizarre rules that don't make sense, that are laborious and stupid, people just ignore them. And they go back to using language for the purpose for which it was invented. A word has to mean what a word means. You can't change the meaning. Criminal and felon and man and woman and all these kinds of things, they have a meaning. And if you think that you can get the whole of humanity to come along with you on some bullshit journey to redefining stuff, it's not going to happen. Anyway, I do love that video. It's hilarious.
It's also
funny to me how for example, there's so many people online now, and I see these arguments that come up, and you see people arguing now, especially around politics with the election on the way, getting into like heated arguments. Hey, I used to do that. I used to partake and get into the comments section. And, you know, especially in Twitter, X, someone will say something and you feel like you have to have your say. And I don't know how many people read those comment sections. We do on the show, because I think a lot of the comments on our show are funny. The people who are commenting are making very funny remarks and interesting observations. Yeah. But on X and certainly I would say on YouTube, where there's hugely political content, there's a lot of people who are just like desperate to be heard. You know, they just don't leave me out. That's all. So I think that's funny.
It reminds me of something Simpio said to me. She said, all of us are unique. Only a few of us are special. And you have to work to be special. And for whatever reason, people don't think that you need to work to be special. Like,
right.
You have to. And we got the false impression because of social media that you could post something now and, you know, for whatever reason, it would trend and everyone finally hears what you have to say. But it's just as unlikely as you hitting the lotto. It really is. Like,
and even if it does, and let's say you become the talk of the town for a day, and, you know, for most companies, they will pay to be a trending topic as long as it's a good one. If it's a bad trending topic, they'll do anything to get out of there. Mm-hmm. It'll happen eventually, but it's not going to do anything long term. Long term, it's not going to matter. I mean, who stopped shopping at Clicks because Julius and the EFF were upset about that label on a bottle of shampoo 2 years ago? No one.
No one.
Nobody's like, remember, wow, we're boycotting. No, didn't make a difference.
Do you remember that that ad campaign H&M had? They put a black kid in a t-shirt that said the coolest monkey in the jungle, and everyone got into it, dizzy and mad. But H&M is still standing. So it's like, guys, get over it. Get over it. In fact, get over yourself. Let's start there. Get over yourself and grow up.
So Mapelo in the comments says, I shared a joke with someone I know the other day. Someone you know, okay? Listen to this. They said, I'm rude and uneducated. I asked her why she feels like that. She said, my joke is about what she is going through, as if I was supposed to know.
I mean, Mike, okay, wow.
Like, again.
What must happen there? What must happen there?
Like, you have to be such a self-centered person to think that everybody around you is prioritizing and knows the detail of what your life is all about right now. And first of all, you don't even know what your life's about right now. If I had to explain what is happening in my life right now to anybody, I would have to sit down and write some things down. I would need to consider it very carefully about, like, all the stuff that is happening, all the changes that are going on, all the different balls that are in the air that I'm trying to juggle. And frankly, a lot of it would be boring to most people. So I don't assume that at any stage anyone would be that interested in what I had to say. But poor Mapelo is like making a joke, probably to just make things a little
lighten
bit more
the mood.
Don't be so serious, guys. And then, like, this woman decides, well, now he's rude, and she used the word rude and uneducated. No, really, no. It's just you are self-absorbed.
Yep. And typically when you hit these people with those kind of things, like when you just randomly make a joke, the first thing they'll do is try come after your character somehow. They'll try throw some dirt on your name somehow. Like, now it has to turn into this emotional boxing match. Like, that, you know what? I'm not going to indulge you. Like, just get over yourself. Honestly, when I think about it, when I consider how many people I come across on a daily basis, like, people I'll never, ever see again.
Right.
I have concern for them as far as, you know, the altruistic ideas that I have for the world. Like, I want people to be happy. I genuinely want people to live their lives and have their little...
You don't want
I don't
bad
want bad things to happen to people. Not at all. No, of course not. I would love for people to live the lives that they want to live. Genuinely so. But sure. I'm also not going to spend too much time worried about how they think or feel about me, because I have thoughts about how I think and feel about them. And, you know, I feel like it balances itself out. Like, honestly,
but you
don't
know what?
Mess with me and I won't mess with you. It really is that simple.
Truth is, they're probably not thinking about you and won't ever again. So
yeah, they won't.
Don't worry about it. Like, really. So here's some interesting things. Patrick says, what a joke. 5 years ago, I was held up with guns. Traumatic. The day after, I told a friend about it. He made a joke, so I laughed with him.
That's
healing.
That's what it is, Patrick.
Oh, it's healing. That's good.
You're a gent. So, that's proper.
Jack, you started off this morning before we even went on air, and you told me something very depressing. You said that petrol prices are going up again.
Yeah, on Wednesday, apparently, yeah. I heard it on the news. Driving back home yesterday, I was so annoyed. I was so annoyed. It's like,
because, I mean, I fill up this car every week, sometimes even more than once a week. And honestly, I don't know if most of us can carry on having to churn out so much money just to get to where we're going. And we know in South Africa, transport is a massive part of the costs that very, very poor people have to shell out in order just to get to work.
Yeah.
I mean, there's this, you know, the taxis that, for example, take so many domestic workers to work. They're not earning enough to pay for their transport and some. So, like, it can be up to 60% of their take-home pay that they're spending just to get to and from work. 60%? I mean, that's crazy. And now that the petrol price goes up, we all know what happens then, right? Everything goes up. But when the petrol price does occasionally come down, like it has once or twice, they never bring those prices down.
It is so weird.
You noticed that?
It is so weird. Like, so ever since I was a kid, every now and again, we'd have to use public transport. And you'd catch a taxi, and this week it's like 10 rand. But this is like way back, you know what I mean? 10 rand. then on the news, you hear that the petrol price is going up by like 75 cents or something like that. And a week later, there's a piece of paper on the side of the window of the taxi, and they let you know that the price is going up to 11 rand. Fast forward 2 months, and the petrol price goes down 150.
Yeah.
That price is not going down. It's still 11 rand. Like, for whatever reason, it never happens when the petrol price goes down. I've never seen in the 35 odd years that I've been alive, I've never seen taxi prices go down. Not once. Like, not even, like, not once.
Or anything. I mean, like, the food prices will go up when the petrol price goes up, but those won't come down. You never see, like, oh, well, we've decided because it's cheaper to get sunflower oil from here to there. Now we're going to charge you less at the shop. It never happens.
It's...
I saw this. I wanted your comment on this, by the way. 3 million South Africans pay 90% of the income tax. This is from a story in the Daily Investor. A tiny fraction of South Africans pay over 90% of all personal income tax. It shows that the precarious position of the country's tax base, with more and more revenue being squeezed from fewer people, was released and revealed by PwC tax partner Professor Osman Molaji. Now, what's interesting about this is, obviously, we're just looking at income tax, right? And there are other tax revenue sources as well. There's customs and duties, there's corporate tax, there's death duties, capital gains tax, all of that stuff. But in terms of personal income tax, which is the largest piece of the pie when SARS takes money in, this is a scary number. 90% of the tax is paid for by 3 million South Africans. Now, let's say our population is 60 million because we have illegal immigrants and all the rest too. And those people are obviously participating in the economy, but they're also like they're not necessarily adding to the formal economy, right? So they aren't being taxed like a South African is taxed. Certainly not in personal income tax. 3 million people out of 60 million is 5%. So 5% of the people in South Africa are paying for everything. I mean, I know that I'm simplifying it, and that's not entirely true. But even if it was 8%, because if you take all the other taxes and put them together, I mean, most of the corporate tax will be paid by the same people who are paying personal income tax, if you know what I mean, because they're employed in the corporate sector. Mm-hmm. Those are also the people who are buying a lot of goods because they'll be buying and selling. So they'll obviously they'll be responsible for most of the VAT as well. Even if we just look at personal income tax, this is completely unsustainable. There's no way you can run a country where, you know, 5% of the people are paying everything almost. It's crazy.
It actually kind of pisses me off, like, because in my mind, it makes me feel like as a taxpayer, I'm carrying the country on my back for whatever reason. Like, meanwhile, we were all given the opportunity for the pursuit of a meaningful goal. But now all of a sudden, it seems like you're paying for other people to live their lives, essentially. And, you know, given the government that we have and the high levels of maladministration when it comes to the fiscus and how, you know, just wasteful they are with our money, this just rubs me the wrong way. It actually pisses me off.
Well, not to mention,
I cannot believe that this is our reality.
Not to mention the fact that if you are in that 5% of people who's paying 90% of the personal income tax, you're getting nothing personally in return. Nothing. So if you're the guy who is handing over 40% of your income every month, that's what it is, 40, maybe even more. It could even be, if you add all the other stuff in, petrol fuel levies, you add TV licenses, you add all that other crap that's basically a stealth tax. But you're probably getting up to, and I'm being conservative here, let's say you're getting up to 50 or 60%. that technically means you're working for the government half the year, the year, and you are getting zero because you don't get, you know, you're not using government healthcare, you're not using government schools. Because chances are, if you're in that, if you're in that 5%, you're probably doing private education, private hospitals, private medical aid. You're paying for all of that stuff in addition. So now you're being taxed at 50-60% plus another 20% of your income, again, conservatively, is going to pay for all the services which the government should be giving that you've refused to use from the government because it's so shit and you have options. So at the end, you're left with, I mean, you're probably working 2 months of the year for yourself. That's what you're doing. And I don't see why anyone would put up with that. I think if you're smart enough, you've already figured out how to get your money out of the country. If you're smart enough, you've already figured out how to pay the least amount of tax possible within the rules, because you'll employ lawyers and you'll employ accountants and tax specialists. And even so, you're still carrying this country on your back, as you put it.
Yeah, and who wants to live like that? That is not a reality I want to live in. Like, it's absolute nonsense. And the fact that you then periodically don't have electricity, traffic lights don't work, you've got potholes to deal with, it just piles on top of it. Like, everything just piles on top of everything. It's absolute nonsense, which is why I keep saying, like, this year's elections are of extreme importance. If we don't take this opportunity to actually show up and do something, I can't even imagine what this country will look like in 5 or 6 years. It's scary, Gareth. Like, genuinely, it scares the shit out of me. And what worries me is that for whatever reason, the way the government has conducted itself, especially over the past 10 years, has kind of trickled down into everyday culture in this country, where people don't do things because they are worthwhile, but they do things because they're expedient. Like, okay, this will be a quick exchange. I'll get my money. You'll get this. You get what I mean? And it's so, I don't like how people do not see into the future, or at least plan for much longer than 2 weeks. Like, it's like we're all in a race just to get to the end of the month, just so we can get drunk and call it a night. It's like,
You know what I feel like? You know what I feel like on this subject? That's all I've got to say. All right. Something else. Apparently, Bladen Zimande has visited the families of slain students. Now, just off the bat, you can tell us the story in a minute. But I've said 100 times on this show, the very worst thing that could happen is if I go through a tragedy of some kind, say a family member of mine is killed or whatever, horrible, truly horrible thing. The last thing I would want is to see one of these sons of bitches, that they must think that they're doing me a favor by coming to visit me.
Mm. Yeah, if I don't want to see that either.
Someone from the government pitches up to try and make me feel better after I've gone through a tragedy, that would be like to add insult to injury.
Yep.
I would not want, and especially in the case of, you know, where the government does have a responsibility, that makes it even worse. So I've never understood this idea that these ministers, these government officials, think that somehow they're helping.
It's virtue, excuse me, it's virtue signaling, and it's just, and at this point, it's what makes it the most repulsive thing that they do is because they all know in the back of their minds that they need to be out there to get people to vote for them. So there was this incident that happened in Bramfontein. I don't know if you heard about it. There was some sort of shooting. I'm not too clear about the details, but there was a student on a bus, you know, just minding their own business, who got shot and killed. And now Mr. Nzimande went to the family to offer apparently condolences and to assist in the funeral arrangements. I found this despicable because if they had actually done their job as the government and assisted in making sure that this country is safe for that child to live in, they wouldn't have to go to that family to tell them, oh, we'll pay for the funeral. It's disgusting, genuinely.
also the fact that so many people in South Africa are so desperate for money that they are forced to take a government handout because they've ruined the economy. The government has ruined the economy. So they can go to people and offer them like a pittance and they'll have to take it because they're so poor, because the economy is so bad they couldn't get a job. Mm. You know, it's like they're smearing your face in it, basically. You know, like when a dog shits somewhere and you take the dog's nose and you rub the nose in it and you smack it so it doesn't do it again.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing to you. They're like, oh, we made you poor. And so when we come with like a few hundred rand, you should be grateful for us. What a cheek.
Get over it. Yeah, get over yourself. Get over yourself.
Crazy.
If you had solved the problem to begin with, you wouldn't be in my face trying to sell me on some idea. The last thing, Gareth, I was telling Debbie this yesterday. My grandmother's funeral was awful. And it was primarily because of how people who attended the funeral were so interested in rubbing shoulders with some of these political people. And I don't think they actually understand how they affect our day-to-day lives. Like their mere presence at the family of the unfortunate student who passed on. Their presence there brought cameras, TV. Mm. Now all of a sudden this family has to at some point get in front of a microphone and let the country know just how heartbroken they are. We don't have to hear that. We know that. We feel their pain. We get it. No parent wants to bury their child. That is an unbelievably awful thing to go through. Now, to have your pain publicized by these political people who are just trying to drum up votes instead of actually fixing the country, it's disgusting.
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. It's terrible. I think that there's some interesting comments here. Indy LWTH says, the majority non-taxpayers have the power to keep voting for the ANC so the taxpayers can keep on paying grants so that they can keep on doing nothing. Great position to be in. Well, it's a slightly oversimplified version of what's actually going on, but I do see your point. You're not wrong. It's just not 100% right. So I'm not going to get into like a detailed argument with Indy. I think we both agree. Bronwyn says, I wish there was a reality where we could have a hard reset. Out with all the old, in with the new. But the new must be qualified and passionate. One wrong move and you're out.
Yep.
See, like I also, this is the big problem we've got. And I think you and I have discussed this before, Jack, because we've interviewed a lot of political people and people who want to stand for office. And Pumi and I certainly have spoken about it because Pumi believes better to make a difference and to get into politics so that you can make the change that you want. Mm-hmm. But the kind of people who get into politics are exactly the people you don't want in politics. And the kind of people you would love to go into politics will never.
Yeah.
You know, the perfect person to be president is the person who doesn't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that person will never run. And they won't go around electioneering and handing out like funeral money and t-shirts and kissing babies and all that stuff. They're not going to do that because they don't want to be president. And yet what we really need is someone completely capable who actually isn't interested in being popular, who will do the right thing regardless. But those people will never go into politics. So it's this really crazy conundrum.
Yeah, and in fact, I think they should, as a matter of law, drop the amounts that these politicians get paid. So if you're a member of parliament, let's drop that down to a third. Maybe let's make sure that politicians get paid the base amount that it would take the everyday South African to have a decent life. You get what I mean? To my understanding, it's like you need to earn about 45,000 rand a month in SA to live a somewhat decent life. This is what I'm told. So let's set it up that way. Politicians, political parties, that is your cap. You can't get any more than that. And let's see who actually steps up to change the country. Because it's pretty obvious that a lot of these guys are in it for the money. It's just a money grab for most of them. And they'll do whatever they have to do, say whatever they have to say, besmirch whoever they have to besmirch, and then go get the bag. So how about we drop how much these people earn, and then let's see who sticks around.
Yeah, and I don't know how I feel about this, but Carla Finvestazen says in the comments, only 40 million people are 19 and over. So actually 7.5% of the people who can vote are paying for the government. So in theory, the funder does not have the ability to make the decisions. So there's a whole other argument. It's like, if you're paying for something, you should be the one who has more say.
Mm.
But if you do that, you do end up with, you know, the possibility that someone with a lot of money is going to take control of everything. I mean, that is kind of what Cyril did in the ANC. He started throwing money around and he took charge. Because you also got to remember, even in the ANC, there are lots of desperate people who will take whatever money they can, especially as you go down lower in the ranks. So
yeah, it's just unfortunate he forgot the money that was on his couch.
Yeah, but he did hand out quite a lot of it, and he promised a fortune to the people who would vote for him when he went up against Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. Remember at Nasrec?
Yep.
Now, you can only do that if you have money. And the worry I have is that we've got to find some sort of compromise between people getting what they pay for. In other words, that people who are paying the taxes need to have a proportionately greater say. Let's not say all the say, but a proportionately greater say, because they are effectively like the breadwinner in the house. Mm-hmm. Like if your dad is the breadwinner in the house, he gets to make the rules. That's how it works.
Yeah.
You know, if your mom's the breadwinner in the house, she gets to make the rules. That's how it works.
I don't know how we would be able to get that one right, but I think I like the idea because it'll also incentivize people to actually go out and get a job so that they can affect things in the way that you're speaking of. So yeah, I think on paper, I like the idea. I just don't know how we'd be able to implement it in such a way that it doesn't completely alienate everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. Honestly, I think we still got to come up with, and this is what every new country in the world, every new dispensation, every new constitutional republic is faced with is like, how do we make the rules that will put us in the best position? And you remember right. when Dan Mulyani was in here the other day, he said to us, you know, he remembers Codessa and he remembers the run up to the elections and all of that stuff. And South Africa as a country, our leaders tried in the 90s to put together the best possible set of rules to not only protect us from government, but to make government accountable, to create organs of state that would check on each other so that you'd have a balance of power, you know, so that people would feel like they had a say in government, because that's really important. Even that, they tried to make it as good as possible in the 90s. You know, so we're talking ancient history here. And even so, it's going to have massive problems. Mapelo says, by the way, 45,000 Rand is still a lot of money for the politicians, considering the fact that they pay for almost nothing. 10,000 would be enough, he reckons.
The lower the better. Mapelo, you're on my side. I love
Dr. Robin says, my old man was a mayor in the 80s. He was paid an honorarium, but continued to run his own business. I would help fix South Africa for nothing, says Robin. That is how much I love this damn place. That keeps breaking my heart. Yeah, I mean, there's an argument that if you want to go into politics, that's almost like you giving back. You shouldn't even get paid.
You are in a position of service. I think people forget that. Yes. You are in a position of service. You're not someone's boss.
Yeah, I think that's been lost along the way, though. Don't know the
completely. Completely.
Yeah. All right, let's end this hour with some good news, because South Africans looking to fire up the braai can expect some relief at the tills. The cost of braai meat has been rising slower than the general inflation rate for the first time since November 2022. According to the latest Shisanyama Index, which tracks the cost of popular braai goods, prices have risen by 7.8% year on year compared to the national inflation rate of 7.4%. This suggests that food prices may be starting to come down after months of sharp increases. One of the biggest factors driving the downtick in braai meat prices is the recent fall in the price of onions and cooking oil. Central bank, however, remains cautious about lowering interest rates. So essentially what they're telling you is it's gone up, but it hasn't gone up as much.
As much, yeah.
Hey, listen, good news is hard to come by. So we're trying to find what we can.
And, you know, the Shisanyama index is the most South African thing I've heard all morning. Shisanyama index?
Like, isn't that great?
It's absolutely amazing. I wonder what goes into that. Like, what? Okay, no, that chakalaka is not the one. We are going to need to switch it up. Yeah, exactly. I love it. I love it.
The Shisanyama index. So there you go. You've learned something new this morning.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be top of mind. Like every time I go to a braai and someone puts some not so great meat in front of me, I'm like, yeah, you see, you did not you did not refer to the Shisanyama index, which is why you ended up with this rubbish meat. Hmm?
By the way, there are some people who are doing more than their job. A pilot who's delivered a baby mid-flight after a passenger went into labor on a plane from Taipei to Bangkok. I mean, this is amazing. So first of all, he's flying the plane.
Mm.
And he takes time out of flying the plane. Maybe he's got a co-pilot. I'm sure he would have. And then he goes and helps the mother give birth to the baby.
Yep.
And then carries on flying the plane. So
as if nothing happened.
This guy's a real winner. His name is Jacarin Saranan-Rakskul. All right. He is a trained medical doctor as well as a pilot. Talk about an overachiever.
Yeah.
Helped deliver a baby safely in the airplane bathroom. Later shared a photo of himself holding the newborn on social media. I've been a pilot for 18 years. I just helped a newborn baby on the plane, he said in a post on Instagram, sharing a picture of himself holding the baby. I think that's pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, that is. Not all superheroes wear capes.
Right. But if you're feeling like you don't do enough in this world, well, you know, maybe you don't compared to this guy. He's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, he is. So
I like giving credit where credit is due. While the rest of us are, you know, complaining about all the stuff we've complained about this morning, and you know, we're trying to make it all work. This guy's got a medical degree and he's a pilot. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. But you can tell that he's a grown-ass man, though. Like, he's been a pilot for 18 years, seven years of medical school before that. So, yeah, that's a grown-ass man.
He's probably 85. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah. He's got a couple of kids himself, I'm sure of that.
Definitely. Definitely. But
can you imagine the panic on that plane, though? Like, that must have been intense. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that... No, but I'm sure people were thrilled when the baby was born. You know, there's a lot of clapping and enthusiasm and all that. Nothing like that is ever... Listen, I don't want it to. I would like my flights to be eventless, you know?
Yep.
I want my flights to be so boring that I don't even remember I was on them. But it must be kind of an exciting thing when a baby's born on your plane. I'm sure that everybody this week has been talking about that. If they were on the plane, they're definitely telling all their friends. Hey, you know, you'll never believe what happened to me on a plane on the way from, where was this? Taiwan to Bangkok. Nice. So anyway, that's all we got time for in that hour. We're going to come back with Democracy 101. Stick around for that and a whole lot more. CliffCentral.com. It is Tuesday. CliffCentral.com.